Hello, Star Trek fans, and welcome to the Rebinge Star Trek DS9 podcast. My name is Kim.
And my name is James.
And we're watching Deep Space Nine from the beginning, one episode at a time. Welcome back to the podcast. Today we are on episode 7 from season 1. The title of this episode is Dax. And it aired February 14th, 1993. I'm glad that we're finally going to talk about Dax a little bit. She was in episode 1 quite a bit, but we really haven't seen much of her since. She's pretty much just looking at a screen, typing letters.
Yes, she has not been heavily utilized yet.
Before we jump into this episode, is there anything from the previous podcast that we need to go over or correct?
I don't think so. I think it was perfect.
Normally, I would have some things, but I have to tell you, I would rather never speak about that episode again, and I think we should just move on.
Okay, moving on.
Okay. The cold opening for this episode is Sisko giving a station log, and he says it's Stardate 46910.1.
Did they just make up those numbers?
I think so. He says that Miles and his wife have returned to Earth for Keiko's mom's 100th birthday. And I would like to say, is Keiko 70? Why is her mom 100?
No, it's just another excuse not to have her on the show.
He says they're trying to keep the station running without Miles, but I assume that Miles was tired and he's been in every episode so far, so he needed a break.
Well, how do they keep the Jiffy Lube open and running? I mean, he's the bellhop, he runs the Jiffy Lube, and he makes sure all the vending machines are stopped.
Well, did you notice none of those things happen in this episode? There's no ship to repair. There's nobody's bags to carry because Miles isn't there, so they don't do it.
Oh, okay. Good point.
All right. After the station log is given, we start in Quarks. And we see the weird vines.
Yes, the lots of vines. And if you'd notice, they seemed really healthy in this episode.
Yes, there's some greenery in the brown vines this time.
Yep, definitely Keiko is helping with the vines. She must be.
Yes. And Dax and Bashir are having coffee or something together. Dax is pushing buttons on her data pad, but on the high def picture, you can clearly see that the screen that she's poking around on is static. Bashir says it's like the refiltration processors were waiting for Chief O'Brien to leave before breaking down, so I guess he's not enjoying his drink. Dax, ignoring him, says this technology must be something the Cardassians took from the Romulans. She's completely in her own world, having her own conversation. And as she speaks, Bashir does this, like, moony-eyed thing where he rests his head on his hand and he sighs, like, ah. Looking at her with puppy dog love eyes. This is a character in desperate need of a storyline and some real development.
I think what they're trying to do is give a character who's a little bit like the original Kirk, who's sort of flirtatious, who is charming, who is sort of this lovable rogue type of character, and they are completely failing.
Well, they're trying to make him too much of an innocent.
Yes.
He's like a child.
Yeah.
I don't see the resemblance to Kirk at all.
I think that's what they're trying to do, but they're failing utterly at it. And I can't really blame Alexander Siddig for this because he's doing the best he can with truly appalling material.
In every one of these episodes, I talk about women in the future, and we talk a little bit about how women are written sort of badly and maybe the way that they were written in the 90s. But I think if you were going to look at this as men in the future, this is just as insulting.
Did anybody in the 90s think this was acceptable behavior?
This is what happens to women in the workplace. This is what's been going on for the last couple of years.
I think we've kind of got derailed here.
It's finally coming out. Yes, we have gotten derailed.
But it is.
It's an important topic.
Yes, it is kind of true.
So Dax is ignoring the moony-eyed guy because who wouldn't? And she starts talking about some type 1 matrix field. And he is just carrying on a conversation as if she's listening. And he says, perhaps we should call in a Romulan repair service. She ignores him and says, oh no, or it's a type 2. And then he asks if she wants another Ractogeno. And she says it would keep her up all night. And then in absolute harmony with his sleazeball character, he says he can think of better ways of keeping her up that are more fun than drinking Klingon coffee.
Yeah, this is definitely an HR complaint. That is direct sexual harassment.
Somebody
at this point.
Somebody just slap him. He is awful.
Slap the writers, at least.
She ignores him completely. And then we see a shadowy figure looking at them through some kind of grate. Lots of things happen behind this grate. In this show.
Maybe Odo should just install some cameras behind the grate. It would save a lot of time.
He should. This is so common. And I don't even know what are those grates. Are they ornamental? I don't know.
They're hiding grates. All the stations have them.
Maybe. They're like one-way mirrors. You only seem to be able to see one way through them because nobody ever sees anyone on the other side.
And they're always dark on the other side.
And the music is ominous, so we know whoever this guy is, he's up to no good. A second shadowy figure approaches and says to him, "Dax," as they look at her through the grate. Dax then says she needs to go to bed, and Bashir wants to escort her to her quarters, of course. She says, "That's not necessary, Julian," and off she goes. She says, "Good night."
"That's okay, Julian. I already have enough stalkers at the moment."
The shadowy figures, plus now a third one who has appeared, emerge from behind the grate and start to follow Dax.
And if you notice, they're also wearing hoods. Purple. Anytime somebody is wearing a hood, they're either a troublemaker or they're a Vulcan, usually Spock or his father.
And Bashir is mumbling to himself, "Not necessary, Julian." Then he smiles, a smarmy smile, and says, "But not forbidden either." And he jumps up to follow her.
At this point, I'm thinking, Julian, stop creeping. I mean, honestly, how many restraining orders have been filed against this guy?
This is what women have been putting up with forever. So annoying. The people following Dax wait until they're in an empty hallway before they call out to her. And when she turns around, the main guy asks if she really is Dax. She doesn't quite answer that, but she asks what they want. Then he nods at the other two people in the purple hoods and they grab her and they cover her mouth.
See, people in hoodies causing trouble.
This doesn't seem like the greatest of plan, as they've just grabbed her and like put their hand over her mouth. You'd think they would try to drug her or knock her out or something.
Yeah, use a stun.
And so Dax struggles, of course, as you would when somebody grabbed you, just as Julian comes around the corner and he rushes the first guy, hitting him with both of his hands clasped together. They kind of fall forward and the stunt doubles fall to the floor because you can really see it's the stunt doubles.
The very obvious stunt doubles.
As one of the purple hoods runs up to grab Julian, when her hood falls back and Bashir sees that it's a woman, he kind of hesitates and then she just punches him because he hesitates. Dax tries to fight back, but it's to no avail, and they pull her communicator off and throw it on the floor, and then they kind of drag her away as she's dazed, and we cue the theme music.
You would think standard procedure would be to call for help, then rush in for the fight. So as you're such a useless fighter, when you get beaten up, you're not passed out on the floor.
You're supposed to call for backup, right?
Yeah.
I mean, all he really had to do at that point was call for security.
Yeah, just go, "Odo, turn on some of your force fields."
We come back from the opening credits and we're in ops. And Kira and Sisko are trying to figure something out and they're looking at a screen together.
Lots of techno babble at this point.
Sisko says it looks like a residual charge in the graviton generator. And he says to run a level 3 diagnostic.
Kira does not seem to be very angry at this point. I mean, something's broken down and she's not angry. Isn't that an improvement?
It's still early. She could get mad later.
Okay.
He says to run a level 3 diagnostic while Odo is kind of standing in the background with his arms crossed. And I was wondering, what's he even doing in ops at this point? He's only there because this next thing is about to happen.
Yeah, why isn't he in the bar like normal?
Why isn't he standing in the door of his office looking at quarks like he normally is?
Or in a bucket.
Bashir finally wakes up from his little altercation and he calls ops, saying three people just took Jadzia. Sisko calls for a full station security alert. I'm sure that works just as well as the evacuation alert and the quarantine alert, which didn't do anything.
Yeah, a little red light starts flashing on the control console.
Which does nothing, especially with Miles not there.
That's what I'm thinking.
He says to secure turbo lifts and seal off the airlocks. Then he asks the computer to locate Dax, but it only finds her comm badge. I always thought the comm badge was a useless way to track something. Seems like maybe we could have some RFID under the skin or something at this point.
It's the year 2020. We can microchip our pets. Couldn't in the future they microchip Starfleet officers?
In the 90s, that probably seemed like a really good idea to put it into the comm badge.
Oh, okay.
But then I also thought maybe people resisted it and they didn't want to be tracked. But I would think if you were in Starfleet, you probably had to sign a waiver that they could track you.
Yeah, plus there'd be a safety issue as well. If you're likely to be in Starfleet and face dangerous or potentially life-threatening situations, wouldn't you want to have a way for them to find where you are? Especially if they could lock onto that and then beam you out.
I know in one of the Star Trek books I read a long time ago, the comm badge was no longer a thing. They actually were communicating with some kind of an implant.
That would make a lot of sense.
Yeah. Odo asks Bashir how long ago it happened, but he's not sure how long he was out. So meanwhile, the people taking Dax are reading directions of where they should go throughout the station. Like, they either have a secret map, or somebody gave them directions, like in a video game. You know, they have cheats, like left, right, left, left, right.
They're playing an adventure game.
Odo notes that they are very carefully avoiding the security tracking grid, and they seem to know a lot about the station. So Kira says if they know that much, they probably also know about the speed of their runabout and will be able to get away. So Sisko asks her to find all the ships in dock with high warp capability. Then he suddenly figures out where the residual charge in the graviton generator was coming from. Someone disabled the tractor beam. Kira says there are 8 ships in dock capable of warp 5 or more. Sisko says seal off all the docking ring airlocks. And then Odo calls for security to start sweeping the docking ring. The bad guys have a little device that overrides all the locked doors. I mean, security on this station is the pits. Somebody's always able to get around it.
Yeah, why didn't they change the codes? I mean, Kira points out that they seem to know the override code. Didn't anybody change these things?
Oh, gosh. I didn't even think about that. Of course, it's like when you fire somebody or somebody quits at work, you change all the door codes. You change any of the the PIN numbers. You don't keep them the same.
The code is actually terrible, and it's full of hard-coded passwords. So
1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, exactly. So they're having a lot of trouble changing all the software.
I don't know. You'd think it would just be a high priority with all the visitors coming and going on this gas station.
Right. And the fact that a race which is openly hostile towards the Federation and the Bajorans, would you be running their software on the station? That's like red flags everywhere.
You'd think Miles would have fixed that.
Yeah, exactly.
We see a close-up here of one of the gloves that the guy is wearing, and it looks like there are little rectangle bits of aluminum foil taped to the gloves. It's very stylish.
Yes, that's a very clunky glove they're wearing. They're their cosplay gloves. They worked hard on those.
Finally, Kira finds them on the security camera in Airlock 5, and Odo and security head there. Kira isolates the area with some force fields, but again, the guy just overrides it.
Another technical point here. You know, they could stop a lot of these problems if they just locked the panels.
Yeah, everybody can just take panels
off. Yeah, they just pull the panels off, you know. I mean, could you have like a little key? You know, just one of those like keys they use on vending machines and things. Stop letting everybody have access to things.
That's such a good point. Dax asks what they want with her, but they don't answer. And while Sisko tries to get the tractor beam back online, they get through all of security and into their little Y-wing and take off.
I kind of like that scene because it shows Sisko is very technically adept as well. I mean, this is sort of following Star Trek themes that the captains are pretty technically competent. Like Picard was very technically competent. And here they're showing Sisko, he's actually fixing the problem they're having with the tractor beam.
Additionally, there's nobody else.
Yeah.
With Miles gone and Dax, who's the science officer, she's out. So somebody else needs to work the con.
Yeah, that's true.
So some Star Trek sciencey stuff is said as the tractor beam comes back online and they stop the ship.
Oh, another great scene from Kira. Her look of smugness is seriously a 9.5 out of 10 on the smug scale.
Odo and Sisko go to the captured ship along with two armed security guards. And as the bad guys emerge, Odo says, "Extremities where I can see them." Like, not all of them, please. Thank you very much. TVPG. They bring out Dax and she seems okay. The head bad guy who I finally figured out at this point who he is. He's the guy who plays Phoebe's father-in-law on Friends.
Ah.
Many years later. The actor's name is Gregory Itzen. He says his name is Elon Tandro and he's a special envoy from Klystron 4 and he's in charge of this extradition procedure. I find extradition procedure very difficult to say.
Yeah.
I think it's because extradition is not a word that comes up much in my normal daily life.
I wonder how many takes they took on that one.
Oh my God, so hard. He's a professional. I'm sure he did it once.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, Dax recognizes something he said, and she looks a little bit guilty. Sisko says this isn't extradition, it's kidnapping and assault. He hands Sisko something and says it's a valid warrant for her arrest. He says there's a treaty between the Federation and his planet allowing her unilateral extradition. The charge is treason and the murder of Elon's father. Dax now looks really guilty, and she won't look anyone in the eye.
This is funny. I mean, did the director do soap operas? Because they do that old soap opera thing, if they zoom in on Dax and do like a really close-up.
Yeah.
It looks like a soap opera effect. In my opinion, that has aged so badly.
After the ad break, we're in Odo's office, and he's reading the order that says Dax was responsible for the death of General Tondro 30 years ago when he was on Klystron 4 as a Federation mediator during the Civil War there. Sisko says 30 years ago was Curzon, Dax, not Jadzia, and it's surprising that he never mentioned being on Klystron.
This is interesting because once again we're seeing this pattern of Dax being very cagey about his or her past, and Sisko, who was allegedly his close friend and mentor, etc., doesn't know about these things.
Well, she does mention, was it in episode one, where a lot of times friendships don't last when the host changes?
Yep.
That's just kind of the norm. It's like you're sort of starting a new life and you're not clinging to the old one because you've let go of a lot of those relationships.
Not telling someone that you're very close to the previous lives. I mean, it was, they were friends. They weren't romantically involved or anything like that. I just find it interesting that in this relationship, Dax has been very cagey about telling Sisko what's happened in previous lives and what they've done.
But even when they were friends and knew each other, he didn't mention that in that lifetime he had been on Klystron. Of course, we find out later kind of why he kept that to himself. I thought it was funny that Odo's not surprised, right? Sisko is surprised here, but Odo's not surprised because he's clearly already decided, oh, he's guilty.
Oh, yeah.
He's very black and white, Odo.
Yes. Odo, it goes straight to the cynical side of, and this is kind of odd because Odo's being very written very consistently through this thing so far, of he is very suspicious of people's natures and motivations and will always fall on the negative side when presented with an option.
Yeah. Sisko gets a little irked by Odo, you know, assuming that Curzon was guilty. And he says that Dax could be cavalier about life and his personal responsibilities, and he had faults, but he wasn't a murderer. How about a traitor? Odo asks. And he says, it says that Dax betrayed the Klystron government to the rebels in the Civil War. And Sisko says, it's nonsense. I knew the man. And that's when Odo says, but did you know the symbiont inside the man?
Odo is pointing something out that is very obvious there, that maybe Sisko is blind to, of, you know, the symbiont is part of this whole equation. And Odo, again, true to form, is straight down to the, let's go to the negative side.
Well, he goes to the law enforcement side of it. This person was charged with a crime. They're clearly guilty. That's just where he goes.
Yes.
He wouldn't do well on a jury.
No.
Now we jump to Dax's quarters, and she's lying in bed, and she sits up when Sisko rings the doorbell and comes in. There's like this weird curio cabinet between the bed and the door, and they have this conversation through the cabinet. Did you notice that?
No, I didn't.
He's standing, Sisko's on one side, she's on the other, and they're talking through shelves at each other.
Huh.
I don't know how you didn't notice that. It was really weird.
I really didn't.
He says that he sent a message to Klystron 4 requesting confirmation of the warrant as a sort of stalling tactic. And he asks her what's going on, saying he can't help her without info. And Dax says she doesn't expect any help.
This is odd. I mean, she seems very unmoved by the fact she's been charged with murder.
I don't know if she's unmoved, but she certainly doesn't seem interested in sharing any info with him. And we kind of go back to that thing we were just talking about, which is the Trill don't seem really open about discussing, I guess, the secrets of their past lives with people. Although, who is? I guess that was a silly thing to say.
Yeah.
And Sisko kind of goes around the cabinet now, and he says, treason and murder will get you the death penalty on that planet. She just says nothing.
Yeah, she refuses to say anything. Yeah. She is just clamming up.
And then Sisko goes around the cabinet again, and now we're talking through the shelves. I can't believe you didn't notice this.
I didn't. Oh, that's funny.
You should almost go back and look. It's so weird.
I will go back and rewatch that.
And so he says, what's the matter with you? Talk to me. And she says she's sorry, but no. And finally, she comes out from behind the cabinet. He says they have 20 years of friendship behind us. And she says, but I'm Jadzia, Dax. And he says, so when you change bodies, our friendship didn't come along. And she says, you know, you're still my very dear friend. I'm sorry.
She points out he was the friend of Curzon. That was really mean. I mean, that was kind of nasty.
But true.
That is true.
And also, it kind of makes his point later when he is trying to say Curzon and Jadzia are not the same. So she's kind of making his point, but it annoys him.
Yes.
Now we go to Sisko's office, and Phoebe's father-in-law is telling him that he's received confirmation of the warrant, so now he'd like to be on his way. Sisko says he was trying to figure out why he tried to kidnap Dax instead of present the warrant properly. Then he figured out that the extradition treaty is with the Federation and the station is Bajoran. Whoops, there's no treaty with the Bajorans. Elon says, that's absurd. No Bajoran interests are even involved here. And Kira steps up and asks, how did you know your way around the station? And he's like, my conversation is with the commander, not with you. Total redirect.
Yeah.
And Sisko says, no, now it's with my first officer. She looks very unimpressed with his maneuvers. You, Klystron, are allies of the Cardassians.
Yeah, magic word there.
Yeah, she's resorted to the you people speech.
Yep.
So
she totally calls him out on this. It's a great scene.
She says the Cardassians must have given you the layout of the station, which not only compromises Bajoran security, but also annoys us.
That was great.
Best line so far of this episode.
And she didn't even get angry.
She didn't get angry. She does this little smile when she says it because it really makes her happy to hold that over him.
Yeah. I like the way this is showing Kira and Sisko working very well together. Both of them are clearly able to play sort of the political game. I like the way that scene played out, the way that you were starting to see, I think, a relationship between Sisko and Kira improving to the point that they can work together as a functioning leadership team.
So now that Bajoran interests are involved, then an extradition hearing will need to be held. Now we go to Quark's, and Odo is sitting at the bar, and Quark is asking how long, and Odo says, as long as it takes. Quark says he's not shutting down for the Bajoran hearing, and Odo manipulates him by saying he's sure Lieutenant Dax would appreciate it, because apparently everybody is in love with Lieutenant Dax. Quark considers it.
She has a large number of stalkers, for a start.
She does. And then he says, no, business is business, I can't do it.
Which is pretty odd after last week's episode, where Quark was easily manipulated.
By a woman?
Yes.
Except that woman knew how to manipulate him, and Dax is not trying to manipulate him. This is actually Odo doing it. Odo has no idea how to deal with coupling. He just has his own impression of it.
Okay, very negative one, as is everything with Odo.
So Odo changes tactics, and he starts talking about how the bar needs to move some walls and remove some of the second level holo suites. He says the provisional government drink.
Yay, finally got to a provisional government. We have not heard that word enough times.
No, we haven't heard it for a couple episodes. But yeah. He says they have new building codes, and I have to enforce the rules. And then he says this bar is too near the exit. And Quark says this is blackmail, but Odo says, no, it's just business.
Odo is strong-arming him again.
Is there really no other room on the station? They need a conference room. Turn some of those empty quarters into one big room.
Yeah, at least have a couple of meeting rooms.
Or use a holosuite. I mean, think how many things we've done in Quark's. We're either in ops or we're in Quark's.
Yeah, borrow one of the holosuites. I'm sure Quark would rent out a holosuite to the Federation.
I'm sure he would. For some latinum. On the promenade, Sisko runs into Odo, and he says they're still looking for a place for the hearing. He says he doesn't want to have the hearing on Bajor because they'd have to take Dax off the station, and that seems risky. So Odo says, hey, no problem. Quark has volunteered his bar for the hearing.
Oh, I like the way Quark volunteered there.
Yeah, he really volunteered. Sisko says he can't get a word out of Dax, so he's wondering if someone could go to Klystron 4 to do some investigating. Odo is like, this whole thing is only going to take 30 minutes, so good luck. So negative.
Odo does not seem to like that idea. He's not immediately receptive to it.
He does not. Sisko follows him into his office, and then we sort of jump to Quark's with the hearing starting, and I think you're supposed to assume that Sisko followed him in and then convinced him he should be the one who goes to Klystron 4, because that's the next thing we learn about Odo.
I wonder if that was a cut scene. Maybe they did do a scene where Odo is convinced why he should go and why he was the best choice. Sisko could probably butter up Odo by telling him what a great investigator he was and how he's the only guy he could trust to do a thorough job.
You're the only one I could trust.
Yeah, Odo does seem to be a little receptive to flattery. Most importantly, in the scene where they're walking and talking, you see Morn at 1504 in the background.
Very good. So the hearing is starting in Quark's. I can see why Quark didn't want it there, because he's not going to get much business while there's an extradition hearing going on right in the middle of the bar.
And for some reason, Morn is actually in the bar. While Quark's coming down the stairs in that scene, Morn is actually at the bottom of the stairs.
Like he's the audience?
Well, I don't know if he's audience or if he's just hanging out in the bar.
He has nowhere else to go.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's only two rooms. There's the ops, which I'm sure he's not allowed in, and the bar. Or he could go to the flea market, as Miles said in the last couple of episodes.
Flea market of the sector.
Yep. This judge is an actress that has been in many, many TV shows. This is played by an actress named Anne Haney. So she sits down and she says, this is an informal hearing, and she says she's 100 years old and she doesn't have time for superfluous language. She says she intends to be there until supper, not senility.
Well, she's 100 years old, so that means she survived the occupation. So I'm going with she was a collaborator.
And she's also the same age as Keiko's mom. Maybe they could hang out.
Oh, seriously, I'm going with collaborator.
Why would they make Keiko's mom 100? I'm still stuck on that from 14 minutes ago.
Maybe Keiko's a lot older than you think. Apparently. People live longer in the future.
So the judge, no, she's not the judge, she's an arbiter. She tells Elon to make his case. He says the accused Trill was a Federation officer who committed capital crimes on his planet, and there's no statute of limitations on these crimes. The arbiter stops him and says she's read the warrant, and the charges are 30 years old. She asks why it took so long to track down Dax. Elon says the evidence was sealed in military files until just recently. So then she asks Sisko why she should deny the extradition when the warrant seems to be in order. And he says the warrant says Dax and refers to Curzon Dax, a male, not Jadzia Dax, a female. Jadzia wasn't even born when this happened. Elon says that's just semantics, it's still Dax. But Sisko argues that it's a different person and he challenges Elon to prove otherwise. This annoys the arbiter. Now she needs the same thing proven since the penalty for this crime is death.
Deep Space Nine, Law and Order Edition.
Dun dun. Sisko seems very pleased with his little trick there, and Dax still is stone-faced.
This is an interesting discussion point about the Trill. Are they the host, or are they the symbiont? Or are they really the combined entity of the two?
Of all of the past.
Oh, yes. Actually, hosts. That's a good point. All the previous hosts. That's yep. Fascinating. Anyway, we go to an ad break now.
After the ad break, we are in Sisko's office, and Kira is saying that Dax doesn't seem to care if she gets out of this or not. And it's like classic Star Trek, because you know, even though you don't know when you're watching, but you know as a Star Trek watcher, she's clearly protecting someone.
She's hiding something. She doesn't want anyone
to definitely, know. Definitely, yeah, definitely. Sisko asks Bashir to gather some evidence that Curzon and Jadzia are two entirely separate people. He says, I don't think there's medical evidence of that, but Sisko says, he'd like him to find it anyway.
Yeah, I do enjoy this part. I mean, Sisko again yeah, shows how, I mean, he shows he's political again. He knows how to play the situation. And he delivers this great line, assume there is and find it.
Right. He also asks Kira to check the Federation databases for any precedents with Trills that will help. And she asks, what if she finds the opposite? And he's like, then that answer is wrong. He says if they do find a wrong answer, he wants to see it because he can't fight what he doesn't know.
Yeah.
So he's not trying to put his head in the sand. He just wants to understand both sides. He just thinks his side is right.
I think as well it shows the experience of Sisko of he knows how to fight this kind of battle. And it points to an interesting question of maybe there's more storyline in Sisko's background. I'm wondering if any of the books that deal with Deep Space Nine or the Sisko character actually explore his background.
I don't know. I bet there are books that do that. I don't know any of them.
Yeah.
I'm sure people who listen to this podcast could recommend some to you.
He seems much more adaptable and not as rigid as Starfleet's been shown to be in the past. Not as sort of rule following.
But he does have that really harsh, strict side sometimes where he sees it his way and he comes down like a hammer on people with his way. So Odo has gone to Klystron 4, and he's calling with an update. He's learned that whoever did murder the general, it got his troops so mad they went out and won their civil war. He became a national hero because of it.
I thought Odo was very interesting on the planet. He's clearly looking into it, and his comment with General Ardalon is a national hero. There's statues of him all over the place.
I think he found, really, that the general is kind of a martyr, because he died and that seemed to motivate the troops to win the war.
So it became a real symbol.
Odo also learned that Curzon and the general were the closest of friends, seemingly inseparable. And he says if Dax is guilty, he'd want to hang him by his heels himself.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Sisko says, thanks for the confidence. And Odo says, don't worry, I'll do my job. The general left a widow and he's going to go find her. Sisko looks a little bit worried.
I think this shows one of the things about Odo as well, of Odo has his strong opinions, but it doesn't get in the way of him actually doing his job. I think it's showing that Odo has a very strict moral code.
I find the way that he behaves, this sort of, ugh, clearly Curzon was guilty and is a bad person, and I don't understand why I should even be doing this, but I know it's my job and I'll go and do it. It feels very whiny to me.
I think that's the way they're portraying the character of Odo right now. Again, it's like the point you make of Kira is just angry woman.
Yeah. Lots of them are one-dimensional.
Yes, Odo is just a grumpy cop.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, we've kind of established that Bashir is very one-dimensional, too. They have so much potential for Dax to not be one-dimensional that it's almost frustrating to watch how everything is just so, I don't know, black and white right now.
Yes.
Yeah, we need more sides to these characters, more depth.
This is kind of frustrating, seeing actors who I know are good and can deliver very convincing roles. And I see it at this point in the series of them almost struggling against the material.
Well, there's a lot of that in the early episodes of Next Gen too. It's not until later when the characters have more depth that the relationships between them become more interesting.
Very good point.
So I guess as a longtime Star Trek watcher, I'm waiting for that to happen with these characters. I know that way back in 93, I gave up long before we got anywhere with any of the characters. Like, I don't think I saw this episode, so I'm not sure how far I got in my watch of it. I mean, I know there were episodes here and there that I would dip in and out of, but this episode was new to me.
I struggled through it.
The whole... yeah, okay. All right, now we go to Kleistron 4 and the widow. And she's saying that Curzon isn't responsible for her husband's death. And I'm looking at that woman going, why does she look so familiar? And it finally dawns on me that's the same actress that played Data's mother.
Maybe it is actually Data's mother. We never addressed that.
No, I think it's a different character for sure, but it is the same actress. And it was so funny how I was just looking at her going, why is she so familiar? What is the deal with her? But anyway, yeah, it was the same actress who played Data's mom. She actually appeared in Star Trek 3 times.
Oh, funny.
So she says that she knows Curzon didn't do this, but her son is obsessed with the death of a father he never knew.
Which is interesting as well.
You would, as the son of a father you never knew, who is held up as a hero in your world, you are going to look at him as perfect and righteous and
yes, you're
try
gonna
to
look
defend
at,
him.
Yeah, you're going to not be interested in the man or the father. You're going to be interested in the legend, myth. The hero of mythology is the way you're going to view your father, which is right. Completely unrealistic, but you could understand that from the son's perspective.
The widow also says that Curzon was closer to the general than any other man on the planet. He was a dear friend of the family. Odo then asks if there are any facts to support this opinion, and she says she doesn't have any. She said that her son has them all. She says there is proof of a secret transmission that was made from the military headquarters to the enemy camp, identifying the exact route the general was taking from the capital to the front, and that was when he was ambushed and kidnapped, then killed. So it's not that they're accusing Curzon of killing him. They're accusing Curzon of making this transmission that allowed the rebels, I guess, to know his location and then kill him.
Right.
Only 5 people knew the route that the general was taking, including the general, obviously. She says her son has established the whereabouts of all of them except for Curzon. And Odo says he has no alibi.
Oh, it's not looking good for him. This is definitely a Law and Order episode.
Data's mom is very nervous at this point, and she says they can't convict him just with that, can they? That he doesn't have an alibi for the time of the transmission. Odo says he doesn't know, and he thanks her, and when he's leaving, she asks how Curzon is, and then Odo has to tell her that Curzon died and is now Jadzia.
She seems very surprised.
Yeah, she's surprised and she's upset. She apologizes to him, saying she didn't know, and he leaves.
Yeah.
And she's pretty unhappy.
You can see that there was definitely something there, which is pretty much deliberate for television.
There are no secrets in television.
Yes.
In soap operas. Space soap
yes,
operas.
Space soap operas.
All right, we go back to the station and back to Quark.
Some nice shots of the exterior.
Elon is calling an expert witness. His name is Selen Piers, and he's a Trill. And I thought he didn't have quite as many markings as Dax, but he does have the marks.
He's a Southern Trill.
The Arbiter says it seems rather convenient that he just happens to be there. And Selen says the Trillian government requested his presence. And I'm wondering, is the Trillian government just like all a bunch of little worms? Like, what was that movie with the singing poo?
Flushed Away.
Flushed Away. And they're like the little chorus that looked like they were
slugs.
They were all held in the sewer.
Yes.
They were slugs. Okay,
it's the little slugs. So I'm picturing the Trillian government as just being a bunch of slugs with microphones.
That sounds about right for you, yes.
Yeah.
Do they sing? That would be the next question.
Yeah, I assume they sing. I assume they sing. They sung this out, like, that somebody needed to go to this trial. It was a little song. I'd sing it, but I don't know it. I'm not musical enough.
And just for the regular listeners, I love the movie Flushed Away.
Me, not so much.
Oh, I loved it. It's so good.
The singing poo got me.
Well, I'm an animation nut, and it's the Aardman style of animation. So what is there not to love about it?
I like animation too, especially when singing is involved. But I don't know, that movie.
Yeah, that one lost you pretty quick.
It really did, yeah. In the ads, in fact. All right, so Selin Piers says that the symbiont in him has survived adult lifetimes of 7 hosts. He says he remembers all the hosts, including thoughts and feelings, and he says that if a crime was committed by a previous host, the current one would remember and still feel the guilt from the crime. Sisko objects, saying it's not a trial, and he's already made his point. He doesn't have to keep going on and on. But Elan says that Sisko would have the Arbiter endorse the idea of a perfect Trill crime, that to avoid prosecution for a crime, you would just have to elude being captured until you changed hosts. Which ultimately is what Sisko is arguing, so he's not wrong.
Pretty much. There is a lot of exposition here. I thought that was a nice way of explaining the Trill and their culture and their biology to a large extent.
Yeah, we do learn a lot.
Yeah, and it's a good way for people who aren't necessarily Star Trek The Next Generation fans to learn something about the Trill. And it's a good way of doing exposition in a courtroom kind of setting or a hearing kind of setting and having a Trill expert there.
Well, there wasn't a lot about Trills in Next Gen, but yeah, you would at least know what it is if you'd watched it.
Right. I thought the guy was oddly robotic for someone who'd lived 7 lifetimes.
I agree. He was. I think my guess is he's never seen Star Trek. That actor, he had no idea what he was supposed to do. Yeah, he was very robotic and not very interesting.
Yes, I have lived 7 lifetimes and they have removed all personality.
All my emotions are now gone. So Sisko now starts questioning the witness, and he asks him how long a host lives before being joined with a symbiont. Selin says early to mid-20s is generally when they're joined. He says the host needs to mature enough in order to decide that that's what they want, that they, you know, they really want to be joined.
Yeah.
And then once they are joined, both symbiont and host bring their own selves and personalities together. Elan argues that the host remembers the crime. Sisko keeps arguing that Jadzia is an entirely new person. Elan says you can't let Dax get away with murder, and the Arbiter is tired of the shouting, and she calls for a 2-hour recess, and she bangs her giant heavy ball.
Quote, "This is an informal hearing, not riotous." I did like that. Oh, and notice she has like one of those Klingon-style balls. I can't remember which movie it was from. Yeah, but instead of having a hammer, there was one of the movies where a Klingon had a big metal hand and a ball and was bashing it. I think
was it the one where Kirk was on trial?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, Kirk and McCoy.
I think that was 6.
So yeah, I saw that and was thinking, oh, I wonder if that was, that's where they got inspiration for it.
All right, we go to an ad break here, and then after the break, the Arbiter says, the answer is easy. We send the symbiont back to stand trial, and we keep the host here. And Bashir says, you can't do that. The two can't be separated at this point. Sisko asks him if Curzon and Jadzia are the same person, and Bashir says, certainly not. Even the brainwaves are distinctly different. Then Elan starts buttering up Julian to try to get what he wants out of him.
Yes.
By saying that his research is impressive for someone so young, Bashir definitely falls for it. He asks how the Trill brain works, and Julian says it's like 2 computers linked together. And he asks if he could analyze the separate brain patterns of the symbiont and the host, and Julian says it doesn't work that way. He wants to know if the brain pattern of the symbiont changes when the host changes, but there's no evidence of that.
Shocker.
Julian leaves, and he's really not helped at all.
Yes, this is where they should play the Law and Order music. Dum dum
dun dun.
Shocker, there is no difference between the symbiont once it is joined with the new host. Dun dun.
Sisko says he wants to put himself on the stand and that Kira will direct the questions.
Sisko takes the stand.
Kira asks
in the final act.
We are never gonna get through this.
I'm leaving that in, by the way, we're never getting through this.
Kira asks about Curzon, and Sisko says he drank too much and chased women, and he wasn't at all like Jadzia. We don't know yet if Jadzia drinks too much or chases women. We've only known her for a couple episodes.
So basically, in summary, Curzon was a drunken womanizer and Sisko's mentor.
That's great to have a drunk womanizing mentor. That's awesome. Sisko says that Curzon taught him about art, science, and diplomacy. Oh, and honor.
And drinking and womanizing.
He says he wasn't capable of treason or murder.
Probably in gambling, I bet, as well.
He says he knew a lot about Curzon, but he doesn't know much at all about his new friend, meaning Jadzia. Then Elon asks him if he prefers that these crimes go unpunished, and Sisko says no, but he doesn't know who is responsible for the crime, the host or the symbiont. Elon says when you put salt into water, the two become indistinguishable and inseparable. But then Sisko says, yeah, but if you boil it, then the salt returns to its original state once the water boils off. And then you can pour that same salt into something else and have something completely different, like Jadzia.
Yeah.
I like that analogy.
I think this reinforces how much the host plays in the Trill's personality. It's kind of an interesting concept because it means that so much of the Trill is dictated by the actual host rather than the Trill itself.
Yeah, I think that's the point that Sisko's trying to make.
Yeah, I mean, and it also ties back to Curzon being Sisko's friend and not necessarily Dax being the friend, even though they have those memories.
Right. The Arbiter calls for an hour break. I think she's sick of this whole thing. And she says that when they come back, Dax is going to have to take the stand. Dax looks like she might say something as they're all standing there in that sort of soap opera, everybody standing, yes, staring off into space. She looks like she's going to say something, but instead she runs off.
This episode felt like it followed a lot of soap opera.
This is very
tropes.
Soapy.
You know, the zooming in on the people, the sort of the stand and look.
Well, because it was all drama, right? Yeah. There was no action at all. They didn't even do like flashbacks to any of the things that happened. So it's just all a courtroom drama and sort of hallway drama, which is very soapy.
Yeah.
But I think you easily fall into that when you don't have anything else in the episode. When there's no action and there's no, you know, other way of illuminating the story, you are going to fall into melodrama traps pretty easily.
Right.
All right. After Dax runs off, Odo calls and says he's made some progress.
He's such a downer.
He is such a downer all the time.
I'm pretty sure Odo would be the person calling up and going, oh, hey, your pets are all dead.
God. I know I was supposed to feed your dog, but he's dead.
Yeah, he died.
Oh, jeez. That's terrible. But yes, that's the kind of call I would expect from Mr. Downer.
Maybe his full name is O Downer.
And they just shortened it to O-Dow.
Yeah.
He says that the transmission to the enemy is the most impressive evidence. There were a lot of communications between Dax's office and the general's home, even when the general wasn't at home.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. And then they finally catch up with the audience, and Odo says maybe they were having an affair.
Yes. Like,
oh, yeah. Do you think the thing we figured out 20 minutes ago?
It's pretty solid evidence.
Yeah. He says because he's the O-Downer, he says if they were having an affair, that translates into a motive for murder.
Oh, dear.
He's such a bummer.
Yes. Odo the Downer. They're having an affair, so he definitely wanted to murder the general.
Because we know how Odo feels about coupling.
Yeah.
We covered that several episodes
ago.
Yeah,
it's interesting that Odo's mind goes straight there.
Yeah.
Straight to murder.
Now that Odo has figured out they were having an affair, he goes back to the widow. And he says that he found evidence of her closeness with Curzon, which I thought was funny. And she's like, what purpose does this serve? And Odo says, the truth. She says her husband was not the hero in life that he is in death. He became a legend, and then she said, and I became a legend's wife. And you really feel, she's such a great actress, right? She was amazing as Data's mother, and she's really good here too.
Yes.
You can sort of feel the weight. Just if you think about it, she has hardly any scenes. She's got, I think, 3 scenes in this whole episode, but she conveys a lot in those scenes.
Oh, yeah.
She's really good.
I mean, she very much portrays how she is now the wife of this great figurehead, this
of the legend. Yeah.
And I think almost it goes beyond that to this person has now reached mythological proportions. As you said, he's a martyr.
Right, yeah.
And she's caught in this place of she is the wife of the legend who must carry on without him.
She says he's still mourned, you know, decades after his death, but she doesn't mourn him any longer. But she knows her place in history, and that is sort of to carry on alone, representing him at the banquets in his name while never talking about who he really was. That would be a bummer.
Yeah. I mean, this is the classic example of print the legend, not the truth.
But she does say at the end of this scene, he'll always be the hero who died for his people, but perhaps it's time for her place in history to change.
That I thought was a fantastic point of her to become an independent person or to become an independent personality.
I love it when we have these sort of flashes of greatness in these stories. Yes. Even if the rest of the story is a little bit drab, you get that little thing in there. And it's like, oh, that is interesting. Right. Yeah, I like that.
She's bringing up the whole concept of the hero and the hero worship. Isn't there the line that the best heroes are dead heroes because they will never disappoint?
Unless something like this happens.
Well, yeah.
We go back to Deep Space Nine, and we're in Dax's quarters at the curio cabinet again.
Have to talk through the curios.
Sisko is asking Jadzia if she's been protecting the Widow's reputation, and I'm frustrated that we're still protecting women's reputation in the future. Why aren't we protecting Curzon's reputation? Oh, because he was a man? It's obnoxious.
Well, she would have to wear a scarlet letter if her reputation. Even in the future, they still have to do that.
So gross. Sisko says there are worse things than an illicit love affair, so why hide this? And then he tries to persuade her, you know, to come forward with it all. But then suddenly he realizes that, oh, maybe Elon is Dax's son. And Dax is like, you have an overactive imagination. That's not what's
happening.
That's
so funny, because that is exactly where I went. When they revealed that there was this love affair going on, I'm like, oh, is it actually Dax's son? That would have been funny.
Oh,
that would have been perfect.
That would have been so stupid.
That would have been perfectly soap opera-y. I mean, they're following so many other soap opera tropes. Why not throw that one in?
That's a good point. Sisko gets annoyed that she won't talk to him.
He gets very annoyed.
He looks like he wants to punch her. And he, damn it, he says, if you were still a man. And then he punches the wall. He's like very manly. Ugh.
Manly man.
She picks on him about his temper, reminding him of the time someone threw a drink in his face. And then they have this awkward laugh about how Curzon punched him to stop him from killing the guy who threw the drink in his face. He says he has a scar on his chin from Curzon's ring. Then Jadzia says she tried that ring on after he died, but it slipped off her finger. It's like this just little bit of sadness there in her.
Yes, I thought that was another great scene as well, because she's dealing with what would happen from a Trill perspective of these things that, you know, these memories that you have or these emotional attachments to things, because, you know, there might be a lot of memories associated with that ring, the person that gave it to him, the life, you know, where you were when it was given to you, the life that you'd had. And now the ring slips off the finger, which I think is a good sort of metaphor for, you know, that life has ended and you're moving on. So I could see that being very difficult if you have all these memories.
Yeah, to a great degree, I would think as the Trill, you would have to somehow be separating your emotions from the host's emotions, because when that person's gone, you have to let go of that person and move on to the next person.
And I guess what they're showing is a lot of those emotions are still actually there, or those memories.
They're still there. Yeah.
Certainly during this transition time, because she has not been, Jadzia has not been joined with Dax for a very long period of time at that point.
Sisko says if she doesn't help, they're going to take her. And she says, just let it happen. But Sisko feels obligated to protect those in his command. And he says he'll stop what he's doing if she tells him that Curzon was guilty. She says she feels the shame of Curzon's indiscretion, but she won't talk about the crimes. She does say that Curzon loved the woman, meaning the widow, and tells him to just stop. And then Sisko leaves. That's a bummer of a scene.
I liked it when she pointed out that when one of her kind stumbles, it's there forever. And it reminds me of in Altered Carbon, there's a scene where one of the characters talks about how he keeps on, you know, he's lived multiple lifetimes. And I may be paraphrasing here, but he says something that you just build up regrets over all this time. So looking back, you just see this line of regrets.
That's depressing.
Yes. Yeah. And it would make you wonder about that with Trills, of if they're remembering all their indiscretions or all their failings or the things they've faulted at. I mean, surely.
So they have to be able to let go of that. Because you would be paralyzed by seven lifetimes of regret.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking of. Surely, you know, that becomes being part of a Trill, of being able to distance yourself from events and things that happened in the past that maybe you regret or the mistakes that you made. Plus, there's also the side of it of, wouldn't you learn from those things? So, you know, you become better over time.
And we just barely scratched the surface of that in this episode. And I hope we explore it a little bit more because it really is pretty interesting.
Yes.
Now Dax is on the stand and the arbiter says, you are either 200 years old or the age of my great-granddaughter. Which is
great quip.
It's a good question.
Great quip.
Yeah, she says she worries that really she's both. And then she tells Sisko, let's just get this over with. I think she's old and tired. So Sisko starts questioning Jadzia, and he asks her about wanting to become a host. She said that she competed against many others and won scholarships and had to pass tests, including tests of psychological ability and character. And he asks what academic degrees she holds, and she says, I had to write these all down because it was pretty funny, premier distinctions in exobiology, zoology, astrophysics, and exoarchaeology, which is the archaeology of space. I had to look it up. And she says that she earned all of those degrees before she became a host. So she wasn't even Dax when she earned all of those degrees.
So it sounds like she's a valedictorian, unlike Bashir, who's just missed
a second
place.
A salutatorian. Maybe that's why she doesn't give him the time of day.
Yeah, you're a second place, Julian.
So Sisko uses this information to tell the arbiter that this woman has done nothing but contribute to her society and asks how someone could hold her responsible for a crime committed before she was even born.
There was more exposition here on the makeup of Trills and the competition to actually be a host. I thought that was a nice touch to once again explain to an audience who hadn't watched The Next Generation what Trills were and how they got to be joined.
Now it's Elon's turn, and he asks if Jadzia understood the responsibilities of becoming a Trill, like taking responsibility for crimes committed by previous hosts. And before we could get into that, in comes Odo and Elon's mom. And she asks to speak and says her name is Inina Tandro, widow of the dead guy. She says the accusations are erroneous because Curzon Dax is accused of sending a transmission that betrayed her husband, but he couldn't have done it because he was in her bed at the time. It's very dramatic.
Shocker.
The funny thing about this is even if they're having an affair, whatever, it doesn't mean that they're always going to be in bed. I just thought that was very melodramatic and funny.
But her reputation is now ruined.
Oh, for God's sake. Elon seems upset. Maybe he's upset about her reputation. I don't know.
Maybe he should have asked at this point. I would have paid money for him to ask at this point.
Are you my dad?
Exactly.
Oh, my God. That would have been great. That would have been so funny. Maybe that's what was going through his mind because he is not happy.
Yes.
And his mother kind of reaches out to him and he steps back like, oh, don't touch me. He was a giant baby.
Oh, definitely.
At the same time, maybe she could have told him this before he took off to go and capture Dax.
But I can also feel some sympathy for him of this is someone who's been brought up in the shadow of the greatest hero of their nation, or potentially their planet, and has probably bought into all the hero worship that has surrounded their father. Yeah. So they can only see their father as this paragon of probably every virtue imaginable and a hero.
It's interesting to me that the mother would maintain that wife of a legend thing to the son as well, you know, rather than telling the son the truth. I mean, he is an adult. It seems like maybe she could have told him the truth. If for no other reason, then it's impossible for someone to live up to that kind of legend.
Right.
Right.
Right. I mean, yes, maybe, you know, at some point when the son is an adult, explains to them of, look, your father at the end of the day was just a man.
Exactly. He wasn't perfect. I think that would have probably been better overall for his mental health.
So imagining that, I can have some sympathy for the son in that situation.
Sure, yeah. Well, I have sympathy for him, yeah. Dax looks pretty upset, as obviously she didn't want all this stuff to come out. But the arbiter adjourns the hearing at that point because she's like, not guilty, no reason to extradite Dax. And so she leaves. And then we go to Dax and the widow walking on the promenade together. And she's telling Dax that it was really kind of her to protect someone she'd never actually met. And Jadzia says she still remembers what Curzon had with her. You know, it's still a memory that she has, even though it wasn't her as the host. The widow says, but it was Curzon who swore himself to silence, not you. And Jadzia says it seemed important to keep the promise because their people cherish the memories of the general so much. And the widow says, it's going to continue that way. No one will ever know that he was the one who tried to betray us and the rebels killed him for the favor.
Oh my gosh. Total soap opera shocker.
I'm a little confused about that. So he tried to betray them by revealing his own location and getting himself killed?
I assume this was a situation where he was trying to do a deal with the rebels that he would sell them out for a share in power. Maybe it was...
He accidentally got himself killed, you think, by trying to form a deal?
Yes. There could be two ways of interpreting this. One way could be he contacted the rebels and said, look, this war is pointless. You know, we've been at a stalemate. Why not negotiate a peace and negotiate directly with me rather than middlemen?
Okay.
Or taking the Odo side of it, being very negative of saying maybe he was saying, look, I'll do a deal. I'll sell out my side if I get to be part of the new ruling government.
Oh, interesting.
It could take it either way.
My notes say, what?
Again, also very soap opera-y.
So then the widow says she wants to ask Jadzia for one favor. She says, live, Jadzia Dax. Then she touches her face really sweetly, and she says, live a long, fresh, and wonderful life. And that's the end.
Good ending.
That actress is just, she's beautiful. I mean, she's so touching and in this scene, but really in every scene that she's in. Yeah. She's amazing.
Well, it was a very good ending. It was a great way of wrapping up that episode.
Yeah. Okay, so that is the end of the episode. We just did some analysis there at the end, but is there anything else that you want to overanalyze?
There's a question of the general of what were the general's motivations. I'm thinking it doesn't matter what the general's motivations were. He was ultimately killed by the rebels and became, as you pointed out, became a martyr to the cause.
Yeah.
And I wonder if she maintained her role as the wife of the, you know, this great hero, this great dead hero, legend, martyr, whatever you want to call it, for stability within the society. Because, you know, after the Civil War was won, perhaps she was seen as a uniting political figure. And she did it out of her obligations to ensuring a peace.
Yeah.
Perhaps that was why she continued to play that role of putting herself aside for sort of the greater good.
Okay, that's good. If we move to women in the future, the only thing I really have to say about it is I find it a little frustrating that we have this really old-fashioned thing where we're protecting a woman's reputation. That it's okay that the men had affairs, or it doesn't mean anything about their reputation, but that somehow this fragile, you know, reputation of a woman is different. I feel like we fell back into the 50s or something.
Yes, that is sort of odd. I mean, perhaps they were trying to show that that particular society held her up in such a high esteem that you wouldn't want to have any question about her reputation within that society. The problem is it's written in our world, so you can't help taking the parallel with our society.
I find it frustrating that in the 90s, we were still worried about a woman's reputation rather than worried about what she could contribute or what she could do for society, other than just being the wife of the dead guy who was great.
She was the wife of a great dead guy. What more is there to want?
I guess my hope is, as I watch shows that are set in the future, that some of these problems with inequality between genders or between anybody, right, races, whatever, that people who are writing about the future are thinking the same way that I am, which is that, oh, that stuff doesn't matter anymore, or it doesn't exist, or it's changed in this way, or whatever. But instead, because it's being written in 1993, it's inheriting a lot of 1993 into the story, even though it's set, you know, hundreds of years in the future.
It's hard for writers to actually do
Of course. Of course.
There's multiple examples of writers thinking progressively in the future of a more idealized society, but still missing some underlying points of not spotting the things that are right in their face.
Or we'll try to sort of with a sledgehammer do some of these things like the TOS episode where if your face was black on one side and white on the other side, you're a lesser person.
Yes.
I feel like that, you know, they were trying to kind of show a race thing there and really how stupid it is. And I appreciate that. But again, it was written in the context of the 60s.
Yes.
And trying to say it was in the future. There's also that Next Gen episode of the Matriarchal Society.
Yeah.
The same thing where I felt like it was really a sledgehammer to try to drive a point home. I'm looking, I guess, for something even a little bit more nuanced, because the sledgehammer, to me, almost mocks it.
Yeah.
And I don't want to mock it. I just want to find a way for it to just be normal. I do think that to a large degree, we could get into many debates, but I do think Discovery tries to do that.
Yeah. But I think on a positive note, I don't think today you would have an issue if you flip the roles in that episode of
no.
If you had the hero of the people was a Joan of Arc kind of
yes.
figure, was a female general who was killed fighting in the war and became a national hero
yeah.
through that. If you did an episode like that and the husband was living up to the ideal of what they should be,
yeah,
it would work.
I love that you took an historical reference as something with Joan of Arc, as something that was more progressive than the show written in the 90s about a time way off in the future. I mean, that kind of makes my point.
Yes.
I quite appreciate that. This was much more of a Sisko episode, honestly.
Yeah.
I was tempted to go back and count the number of lines that Dax actually had in the episode, because it wasn't many. It was mostly other people. I mean, she had a little bit at the end, but really she went into that stony silence mode and she didn't say much. We learned about Trills in general, and then we learned a little bit about Curzon kind of from the Widow, but we didn't learn much about Jadzia Dax except for that one scene where she talked about her degrees.
Yeah. Sisko is a very passionate character. He
yes.
will do anything for his friends. Also, it shows that he clearly was quite a hothead when he was younger. And there's still that aspect to him.
Yes, I agree with that. And again, we see that really stark contrast between how Picard handles things and how Sisko handles things.
And I also like with Sisko, the scene where he's talking to Bashir and Kira, and
yeah.
he's being very strategic in what he's planning.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't want to be surprised by anything. And giving his subordinates the direction of, you know, if you find that answer, it's the wrong answer.
But I would also say, as this is a leadership podcast, that's maybe not the way I would have approached that. And instead, I maybe would have tried to show them what I was thinking about how Jadzia was her own person and we really need to be protecting her, instead of saying, if you find this thing, it's wrong, but not explaining to them the motivations.
Yeah.
And because I have this whole thing about leadership is not about him telling them to do what he wants or find what he wants. It's really about him convincing them that they want to find what he wants.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's an interesting point.
Maybe we need a new section of
leadership in the future.
In the future. When it's appropriate. It's not always appropriate.
Well, in this episode, we'll have leadership in the future.
Okay, let's do thumbs up, thumbs down, or neutral. What is your vote?
I thought this was a thumbs up. I liked the way Sisko was portrayed in this episode. I liked Dax. I liked a lot of the exposition of how the Trill culture functions and how Trills think and behave. There was a lot of good stuff in this episode.
Okay. I was actually, for the first part of this podcast, I was probably at thumbs neutral. But the more we talked about it, the more I've decided to do a thumbs up. The things that I liked, though, revolve quite a bit around some of the acting. I thought there was some really good acting, apart from the robotic Trill guy. I mean, the Widow, Data's mother, I thought she was so great. And I liked
yeah.
a lot of the things that she had to say. And even though they did that sort of weak thing with the woman's reputation with her, I thought she did so much with the little bit that she got. I thought she was fantastic.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to switch my vote from neutral to thumbs up.
Yay. It shows a glimmer of sunshine for the future.
What do you mean?
I mean, it shows a ray of hope for better writing and better episodes.
Ah, okay. I couldn't tell if you meant the details of the story somehow showed a glimmer of hope or the fact that I gave something, I gave one of these episodes a thumbs up.
Both.
What's your glimmer of hope?
Both.
I've given, I think this is my third thumbs
okay.
up. All right. That is it, people, for season 1, episode 7. Come back next week for episode 8. In the meantime, if you'd like to tell us your own overanalysis of this or any episode, or if you just want to say something nice, you can email us at rebingeit@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at rebingeit. You can subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or you can pick us up at talkthroughmedia.com.
Thanks for joining us on the Rebinge Star Trek DS9 podcast.
That's it for me.
And that's it for me.